Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Default Messaging Provider, Version 6 and Version 7, Concept and Architecture Overview. Today's presenter is Mohammed Naji. Mohammed started with IBM back in 2003 when he initially supported the IBM JDK on Linux platforms for 2 years. He supported WebSphere MQ for the past 7 years and the WebSphere default messaging provider for the past 2 years. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Mohammed.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Joseph. And thanks, everyone, for attending this presentation. This presentation will be about the concept and architecture of the WebSphere default messaging provider version 6 and version 7. So, Joseph, if we could move to the next slide, please. Today's agenda, we're going to talk about the default messaging provider was version 6 and version 7, and its implementation, which is the service integration bus, and also the components that compose the service integration bus. We're also going to talk about the application and type of connections that can be made to the service integration bus. We will then summarize, and then we will allow for questions and answers. Moving to slide 3, please. The next 3 slides will give an overview of what the default messaging provider of was version 6 and version 7. That is version 6.0, version 6.1, and version 7. Moving to slide 4, please. WebSphere default messaging provider. In WebSphere Application Server 5, there was the only messaging provider or the only messaging platform was provided in WebSphere Application Server 5 was the embedded MQ, which is a light version of MQ versus the full-blown version of MQ. This light version of MQ includes everything but the cluster and the SSL. So in version 6 and on, the default messaging provider was introduced. And this, just to give you an idea how this default messaging provider, how big it is relatively compared to WAS. As we all know, WAS comprises of many components of SIB, and SIB is just one of them. And SIB code forms about 25 to 30% of WAS code combined. This default messaging provider supports asynchronous messaging, which is fire and forget information exchange, and also it was enhanced in WAS 7. And also fully compliant with J2EE, and meaning that it supports the Java Connector Architecture 1.5 and Java Messaging Service 1.1 standards. Moving to slide 5, please. When you install WebSphere Application Server, the default messaging provider is installed, so you don't have the option to omit it. So it is the WebSphere Process Server, WPS, and Enterprise Server Bus, ESB, and Gateway Partner, WGP, and Maximo, and other WebSphere products sit right on top of WAS and ultimately end up using the Service Integration Bus extensively. The default messaging provider also provides a mediation programming, which are applications that allow modification and routing capabilities while messages are in transitions. Moving to slide 6, please. For the MQ users, the terminology in WebSphere default messaging provider will sound different, and this is only because to fit the WAS concept. This is a way to accomplish messaging while keeping the skills within WebSphere application server. And that said, the same core concept is still the same as any asynchronous messaging platforms and actually works well with WMQ. In addition to these, the default messaging provider, version 6 and version 7 of WebSphere application servers still supports the WMQ messaging provider and version 5 default messaging provider. The version 5 default messaging provider is for backward compatibility and for applications that use to connect to WebSphere Application Server version 5. Moving to slide 7, please. In the next few slides, we are going to speak of the service integration bus, which is the implementation of the default messaging provider. Moving to slide 8, please. Okay, the service integration bus implementation, which is an implementation of the default messaging provider, as I have mentioned, for WebSphere 6.0, 6.1, and 7.0. And the components, the following are the components that compose the service integration bus. It's a bus member, we'll discuss all this, and the SIB service, which is a component of WAS, messaging engine, the core concept of the service integration bus, and the data store, where the service integration bus stores its messages and its data, and also destination resources. Moving to slide 9, please. First, we'll start with a bus. Moving to slide 10, please. The term bus is widely used, especially in the hardware industry, but also in software. From a SIP integration bus perspective, it's a group of interconnected servers, clusters, and even WMQ servers that once they become a bus member. It's not a runtime component. In other words, you cannot start it or stop it. It's just an administrative concept. There is no set limit, per se, to how many buses you can create within a cell. If you create a bus just by itself, it would be useless, unless if you make other service member of it. To access it, in the admin console on the left navigation bar, you click on service integration and then buses. Moving to slide 11, please. Okay, who can be a member of a bus? An application server, standalone application server, a cluster of application servers, or even a WebSphere MQ server, or a mixture of all the above. When a server or cluster becomes a bus, there's only one messaging engine. We will discuss the messaging engine components in next slides. One only messaging engine is created, and also the service, the SIP service, which is already there, which is a WAS component, gets enabled once a server or a cluster becomes a member of a bus. Moving to slide 12, please. Bus membership. When a cluster bus member becomes a bus member, only one instance of the messaging, actually one messaging engine as an object, is created for the whole cluster. However, each server or each member of a cluster will host an instance of that messaging engine. But at any time, at any point of time, that all those messaging engines will become active, but only one at a time will be running. The rest will be in a standby or joined mode. When WMQ server becomes a bus member, there is no messaging engine that's been created. It's basically just a logical representation of the queue manager is created within the bus. And the communication between the bus and that queue manager is automatically created, and connection is made across a server connection channel, which is already defined in WebSphere MQ server. Moving to slide 13, please. The next slide will talk about the SIP service, which is a WAS component. Moving to slide 14, please. The SIP service. The SIP service, it's an application server component and is responsible of the functions of the service integration bus that comprise the service, the SIP service. Without it, there will be no messaging going on. When a server becomes a bus member, or even a cluster of application servers becomes a bus member, that SIP server gets enabled automatically. You can, however, disable it if you want, but it gets enabled automatically. It manages also all the defined messaging-related channels, and also it handles the inbound connection requests from the connecting applications. Moving to slide 15, please. This diagram just gave you a pictorial view of such setup. Let's say you have a cell, and then you have four servers, server 1 through 4, and you have a standalone server 1, a standalone server 2. You have a cluster A, and you made server 3 and server 4 a member of the cluster A. then you made server 1, server 2, and cluster A member of the bus. As soon as server 1 becomes a bus member, ME1 gets created, and it comes to a full running state, as the small picture here in black with two gear indicates. And the same thing for server 2, ME2 gets created. Now, for cluster A, you have the same ME being created, right? But two different instances, ME3 on server 3 and ME3 on server 4, but only one of them is running, which is the one hosted by server 3, and the other one hosted by server 4 is in joint state. You have queue manager 1 and queue manager 2, assuming that they have been created somewhere in the same box or remote box, and you have made queue manager 1, queue manager 2 as member of the bus, and here with the dashed line of the queue manager 1 and queue manager 2 within the cell indicating that those are a logical representation of the two queue manager within the bus. Moving to slide 16, please. So messaging engine is the core concept of messaging in default messaging provider of WAS 6 and 7. But what is a messaging engine? Moving to slide 17, please. Messaging engine is relatively, compared to servers, it's a lightweight runtime component inside an application server. It does provide the core messaging functionality for bus. The intercommunications between all the MEs within a bus are already created for you to create the illusion of the concept of a bus. And one ME is created for each added bus member. Let's say if you have that server 1 becomes a member of bus 1, you have ME1 is being created. But if you make that server 1 a bus member of another bus, bus 2, you end up with another ME created for bus 2. So you have two of them running. The next thing here, it shows the ME naming convention. For a server, it just carries the node name, that server name, dash, the bus name. For a cluster bus member, since you can add more messaging engine, because when you have a cluster, you basically have two or more servers as cluster members, you can, let's say, you have server 1 and server 2, you can add another messaging engine running in server 2, and you have the original one still running on server 1. So the name of the second one will carry the same name here, cluster underscore name dash 0001 instead of 000, because the 000 is carried by the first originally created when you made that cluster as bus member. And that increments as you add more messaging engines. Moving to slide 18, please. Now, when a cluster becomes a bus member, depending on how many servers you have, you can add more messaging engine into the cluster, and you can assign which server you want that particular ME to run. And this is done by using the call group policy. Let's say if you want to use or if you want to implement an HA and WLM environment. For an HA environment, the HA manager, when you, without even adding a messaging engine into the cluster, the HA creates a high availability group, HA group. And by using that group, it keeps track of what's running, what instance of messaging engine and what server is running, and it keeps probing the one is in running state and also probing the one in joint state. So that way, if anything happens with the one or the server that's running the messaging engine, it can always fail over to the one in joint state. In a typical workload management configuration, you will see a number of ME equals to the number of cluster members. And each one is hosted by, and each server hosts one ME. Moving to slide 19, please. ME startup is, although an ME runs inside an application server JVM, it runs like a thread under the JVM process. Its startup is asynchronous to the startup of its hosted server. So when you start up the application server, you don't expect the messaging engine to start right away. It will take time, a few seconds to minutes or so. Depends on how many destinations and how many how many messages you have stored in the destinations. So it will take time before you see the messaging engine has come to a start mode. And usually we have customers that sometimes see applications failing to connect to the messaging engine and said, well, they say, I started the application server and I see the application cannot connect to my messaging engine. That's only because the messaging engine didn't come to full start. There's actually a way for the application to configure your application to wait for the messaging engine, and that's by using the management bean that probe the status of the messaging engine, and once it started, it refers back to the three application and inform the application that the messaging engine is ready to accept attachment to it. And the following message code, CWSID0016I, can be queried in the JVM logs to monitor the status of the messaging engine. Moving to slide 20, please. And this is just a screenshot that I took and showing the messaging engine in start mode. Okay, moving to slide 21, please. The next component of SIP integration bus is the message store. So what is the message store? Moving to slide 22, please. A message store is used by the ME to preserve both its volatile and durable data. Volatile means the data that doesn't last after the ME stops or ME fails for whatever reason. The durable state or durable data is persistent messages. They are available no matter what the ME status. Even after restarts, you should see those messages, like persistent messages, for example. When upon starting a messaging engine, the messaging engine, one of the requirements, it needs to get a single message store with an exclusive lock to prevent other instances of the same or other ME from trying to use it. This provides or this ensures the data integrity. So if that lock, and we'll talk about the message store types and you'll see what I mean, but basically it needs to get a lock to that data store. Without that lock, without an exclusive lock, the message engine will fail. Now, there's two types of message store. There's a file store and a data store. Moving to slide 23, please. A file store, only supported in version 6.1 and 7.0. The file store, it's basically a set of three flat files, file system files, and that is accessed directly by the native operating system. They are made of log file, permanent store file, and temporary store file. In the next slides, we'll go through each one of these. Moving to slide 24, please. Log file. The log file contains transient data, such as information about current active transactions, about all the transactions that are going on for that messaging engine. It has a fixed size at runtime, which is set by the minimum size, which is, if you don't set it, well, you can at least set it to at least 10 megabytes. The default is 100 megabytes. The way data is written to the file is written sequentially. Just if you're familiar with the circular logging in MQ, that's basically the same thing. The information about transaction gets written to that file, and once the file gets full, new information gets written to the beginning of the file. And the information that was in the beginning of the file gets overwritten, of course. Moving to slide 25, please. The next one is the permanent file. It contains the restart. It contains data, persistent data, actually, and it survives restarts of the ME. Persistent data includes the messages, mainly persistent messages and their transmissions. The minimum size allowed is zero bytes, but the default is 200 megabytes. And the maximum size is optional. You can set it to 50 megabytes, or you can just leave it to 50 megabytes. Now, when created, the allocated space, as shown here, is the minimum size to whatever, if you leave it to default, for example, to 200, and plus the size of the log. If you leave the log file also to 100, so you'll end up the default size of the permanent file to 300 megabytes. this file will always grow to its maximum size. And if that maximum size, like I said, the maximum size is optional. If you don't set it, then the maximum size, or there will be no limit for that permanent file, so it will go free. So the customer or the user needs to be aware of, they need to have some archiving facilities to take care of that growing file, especially if they have high workload. Moving to slide 26, please. Temporary file, it contains that data that will not survive the restart of the ME, unlike the permanent file. And it's only used when the messaging engine sees that its Java heap is being used up or about to be used up, then it starts writing the non-persistent messages to this temporary file. And when that happens, that's called spilling. Nothing is allocated when the messaging engine starts, unlike the permanent file, so it's empty. And its size allocation is exactly the same as the as I discussed in the permanent file. Moving to slide 27, please. More on file store. In HA environments, IBM recommends to use an external facilities like SAN, Storage Area Network, to provide multiple MEs to access to the same file system remotely, something like shared drive. The advantage to that, or in general, of using a file store is better performance, of course, and lower administrator versus the using the database, which I will discuss in next slide, and also lower deployment cost. But the disadvantage is still you have to use an external facilities to provide a shared drive. The next one will just show you where the file store is located. Moving to slide 28, please. Okay. Now, data store. Data store is basically a set of tables within one of the supported database, which I mentioned here. It's basically a schema, a set of table, and can be accessed by a JDBC driver, JDBC data source. Moving to slide 29, please. The tables, this slide and the next slide will also show you the tables, what are these tables and what's their roles. When an ME is using a data store, once it connects, upon connecting, as long as the JDBC drivers are provided and everything is provided as it should, then a data store is created on the fly. And the following table gets created also. The first one, or the first two that's created, for the version 6, or the 6.1, the SIP owner table gets created, another table gets created, but the log is being implemented and obtained by this table, SIP owner table. When ME starts, it creates this table, and it uses the first row, and it puts two type of information, the ME UUID and INC UUID, which is the unique identifier and the incarnation identifier. The ME, the unique identifier is unique for the ME as an object. The incarnation identifier, it changes every time the ME changes. So incarnation identifier is an identifier for the ME instance. So you can have ME of 4 or 5 instances, but that ME has the same unchanged unique identifier, but the incarnation identifier gets changed when a failover occurs. So it looks at those entries, and it compares itself to those two entries. If it finds the same unique identifier, says, okay, that's me, and I am allowed to get an exclusive log on this table. If not, then it fails. It said somebody else is using this table, therefore I'm not allowed to use it. In version 7, though, there is another table that's been added, which is 7 owner, SIP owner O, the letter O. It's just used for lock-in process as well. It doesn't put any information. It has only one empty column, and which is empty, but it's used and hard-coded within WAS version 7 code to access the lock. Then you have SIP class map, which is catalogs the different object types in the data store, all the types from persistent data, transmission, transitions, and their IDs. The SIP listing, also it lists or also catalogs the SIB NNN, where NNN is a number. I'll discuss those in shortly. But the SIB extract maintains the status of active two-phase commit transactions with their IDs using hash functions. And also you have SIB keys, which assigns unique identifier to objects in the messaging engine, like destinations, channels, or messages. So you have the SIB 000, contains information about the structure of the data in the other two tables, which are SIB 001 and SIB 002. It might not be only two tables, SIB 001 and SIB 002. You might end up with SIB 001 up to SIB 005. It really depends how many persistent messages you have. Basically, these two tables are used for, the first one is used for persistent messages. Okay? So, but if you have many persistent messages, then the messaging engine will end up creating another SIB 002 for its persistent messages. And therefore, it will create another one, SIB 003, for non-persistent messages. For non-persistent messages, that only occurs when spilling occurs. Just the same way with things happen with the temporary file, just to conserve the Java heap that the messaging engine uses, it puts these non-persistent messages into this table. In this case here, I only have SIB 001 and SIB 002. SIB 001 is for persistence and SIB 002 for non-persistence when spilling occurs. Data store access. The messaging engine accesses its data store via JDBC data stores, as I mentioned. And for quick setup, if you wanted to test the database rather than having your own database set up and dealing with the connection and stuff, the WAS provides an access to a database, which is embedded Derby database. The only thing about this Derby database, it doesn't allow multiple connections at the same time. So you can basically test it with one connection only. The data store location can be in the same host as the associated ME, and of course, by that way, you gain higher persistent message throughput, but it may not provide the availability required. You can also have your data store on remote host, which is most environments are set up that way. And most environments are set up in a way that they have a single database shared among multiple messaging engines, and each messaging engine has its own schema within that database. Moving to slide 32. This slide here, number 32, it's basically it shows you a topology of messaging engines, and each one of them is using a different data store. You have server 1, the ME2 is using file store, and you have the cluster A and server 3, which are member of the bus, are using or sharing the same database, which is DB2, and you have server 1 using its own Oracle database, either locally or remotely. Moving to slide 33. In the next slides, we're going to talk about the bus destinations. Moving to slide 34, please. Bus destinations is a logical address to which application can attach to in order to exchange messages. But note the word here, logical. I'll go over it in the next slide. There are actually four types of destinations, of bus destinations you can create. It's a queue destination for point-to-point messaging. You can create also topic destination for pub-sub messaging, an alias destination where you can map a destination name to another destination, either locally or in remote bus, which we call foreign bus. Also foreign bus, which is not a destination within the bus, but it's just a logical representation to another destination, and that destination could be in another bus. Usually it's another bus or even in another WebSphere MQ server, which is a queue manager. Moving to slide 35, please. Okay, since a bus destination is simply a logical address to which applications can attach, it cannot put messages into a logical address. So how can persistent data can be directed to a logical address? Well, the SIB integration bus is designed and coded to, when when a bus destination is created, there's a physical representation of that bus destination also gets created, and that is referred to as a message point. In the next slides, I'll discuss what a message point is. Slide number 36, please. A message point. A message point is basically a physical representation in a messaging engine of a destination defined on the bus. It is created when a bus destination is created, and it can be configured, like let's say when you create a bus destination, a message point is created for you. You can go to that message point and you can override some of the properties that the bus that the logical representation, which is the bus destination, has. There's actually two types of message points: a queue point for message point for queue destinations, and a publication point. So queue points and publication points, these are the two. The publication point is the message point for a topic space destination. Here, I just if you want to be pictorial, just like you can think of the bus destination as being the string. If you look at the figure to your right, and the balloon being the message point. Moving to slide 37, please. Okay, now what's a queue point? Now, upon creating a queue destination, okay, when you create a queue destination through a wizard, the administrator will have the chance to assign which member of the bus. It could be a server, or it could be a cluster of servers. So you get to choose one of the two, one of the bus members. So your messages will be stored and processed by the messages for that queue. So for bus members with one messaging engine, and if you create a queue point or a queue destination, a single point is created in that messaging engine for that bus member. All messages that are sent to this queue destination will directly go to that queue point hosted by that ME. In that case, it's very easy to maintain the message ordering, because you only have one queue point and all messages go into one queue point. Now, things are different when you have class bus member with multiple MEs. As I discussed, you can always add multiple MEs. When you create or when you make a cluster of bus member, you end up with only one ME, but you went ahead and created more ME. Let's say you have three servers within that cluster, you created two more besides the one originally created for you. When you do that and you decide to create a queue destination, you still, in the wizard, you will still be asked where your queue points will be hosted. You'll need to assign a bus member. If you choose that cluster, okay, with multiple ME, you will end up with partitioned, with queue points partitioned across all the ME. So if you have three MEs within that cluster member, or cluster bus member, you will have a queue point of that destination in each ME, and they're partitioned. And once that partitioned, messages will not be sent to only one. They will be maintained by HA and workload management. So they will be workload managed. So each queue point will get its share of messages. In that case, then it will be hard to maintain the message ordering by just using the queue points. In that case, the HA and WLM takes care of that. But to avoid orphaned messages, let's say you have three queue points, and only you need to make sure that each queue point is being attached to an application like an MDB, for example, to make sure that messages don't sit in one of the queue points and sit there and consumed. Moving to slide 39, please. What's a publication point? A publication point is for a topic space. When you create a topic space destination, a publication point gets created. This differs from the way you create a queue destination. When you create a topic destination, you will not be asked for a bus member where you can host your publication point. It will actually create a publication point in each ME that exists within the bus. So in my example here, my screenshots here, I have a in my test bus, I have two members of the bus. One of them is a server, the other one is a cluster, and that cluster only has one ME, and the server has one ME, of course. So I end up with two publication points in this case. Moving to slide 40, please. The next few slides, we're going to talk about the connecting applications, how they connect and type of connections that can be made. Moving to slide 41, please. Applications that connect to a bus, for an application that attests to a destination and send messages is a producer, and a consumer is an application that attests to destinations, and consume messages is a consumer and such an MDB. Mediation also is an application that is deployed to the bus and is associated with one or more destinations. Like I mentioned in the few slides at the beginning, mediations are used for in-flight messages, routing, and manipulation. I'll move into slide 42. This figure here gives you just an idea how a JMS destination is being used as a proxy or a pointer to the destination on the bus. You have the application here on the left, application code box, doing the lookup, the JNDI lookup in the JNDI namespace, looks up the JMS connection factory, and also looks up the JMS destination, and it points to the bus, looks up for the bus destination. Once the bus destination is found, then it gets attached to it, and messages gets taken or produced from the queue point, which is hosted by this ME for that bus destination. Slide 43, please. Here in this example here, it just gives you more details, JMS API programming model. When you create a connection factory, you create a connection. Then from a connection, you create a session. From a session, you can either create a message producer or a message consumer. Okay? Also, you create a message. So you can either send that message through the message producer or consume the message through the message consumer. Now, notice the dashed line with the arrows. The message producer, for instance, on the left-hand side, it attaches to a bus destination 1, okay? And the bus destination 1, it looks at its physical presentation, message point 1. Then the message producer can go directly to the message point 1 and put the message there. Same thing with the message consumer. Okay, moving to slide 44, please. More on SIP application, and this is, I want to talk about the remote get and remote put and how it's implemented in the service integration bus. Now, as the name suggests, if a destination is not local, let's say when you attach to a bus and you attach to a particular ME, you have ME1, ME2, ME3, and you attach to ME1, just round-robin algorithm, you get to be attached to ME1 instead of ME2. But your queue point is actually located in ME2. So that is a remote get because you're using a ME1 as the gateway to get ME2. So that is a remote get or remote put. This remote get and remote put, it's really not recommended. It's most of the customer's environment, what I see, is it's been extensively used in the WPS environment when they're using golden topology. And we see a lot of remote get and remote put. There's no problem as long as they don't report any problem. But it's really hard to diagnose and also provide network latency. Just like I said, you're connecting to ME1 to go to ME2, so you end up with two connections instead of just going directly to ME2. Moving to slide 45, please. So here I just mentioned these actually are found in the information center, and these steps are self-explanatory, and it shows you how the remote put is being implemented here. You have the producing application attaching to ME1 instead. Then a remote queue point. You remember the queue point that we talked about? Now this one is remote. It's created on the fly. You don't create it. The service integration bus created for you. Because what it does is once the attachment is made to ME1, a lookup in the of the actual cue points that the producing application is looking for is being made, then it's found in ME2 in this case, then that's why that remote cue point is created, and it is used for to retain messages, really. Let's say if you connect to you do this connection, this remote put here, and ME2 is not available at some time, right? Then messages are being put in the remote cue point in ME1 and are retained there until ME2 is up and running. Then once that happens, then messages from the remote cue point in ME1 goes to the actual destination, which is the cue point in ME2. Moving to slide 46, please. I have also included this, and this is just self-explanatory steps that explicitly explains or the remote get, just as in the previous slide. 48, please. Okay, in this presentation, we have gone through the concepts in a high-level perspective of WAS version 6 and WAS version 7. We also discussed its implementation, which is the service integration bus. We also discussed the components that comprise the service integration bus and related components also, like the SIP service and the HA group and the core group policy. We also discussed the type of applications and type of connections that can be made to integration bus. Moving to slide 49, please. This chart include links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Please visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts, like the one you are attending today, and access previously recorded presentations. DeveloperWorks also offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org, WebSphere.org, for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help models to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for password or passport advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. And now I will return the control back to Joseph.
Thank you, Mohammed, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jose, we would like to open the lines for questions.
The first question comes from Namesh. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a question. It's more of a two-part question. Here at Aetna, we use IBM MQ as our messaging platform, and I wanted to know if with the default messaging provider, you know, if there's any differences in functionality and if there's any one better than the other that we need to consider for certain cases in order to choose which one we need to be using. And as a carry-on to that question, the second question that I have, or the part two, is that can we use both on the same node? Because I know that at least in WebSphere 5X, we tried to do that, and it did not work because the messaging platform that came native with WebSphere, there were some classes or some directory structures that conflicted with the IBM native MQ that was installed on the box already. So I want to know if with 6X, with the default messaging platform, can the IBM native client MQ and the default messaging provider be installed and work on the same node? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the questions. Answering the first question, there is no set disadvantage or advantage of using MQ over SIB or vice versa. If you have an MQ environment that's homogeneous type of network only that includes only queue managers and stuff, then customers tend to stay with that with their comfort zone, which is MQ. Now, if you're working on WAS, you may want to keep the skills of WAS within WAS, and that said, then you may end up by using the default messaging provider. However, the two of them works well together, and this is probably answer your second question. You could either make the queue managers a member of a bus, okay, and that way you don't have to deal with the interconnections between the queue manager and the bus members, or you can simply create a foreign connection to NQ queue managers. And I did not cover the interconnections between NQ and the SIB, because as you can see already, it's a lot to cover, and probably that's an opportunity for future representation, which I'm planning in the near future. But basically, yes, you can have heterogeneous type of network made up of NQ managers and bus, SIB integration buses. But it is just up to you how you want to connect to them. You want to either make those queue managers as a member of the bus, or just connect to the queue manager, which is the typical way of most customers implement, by not using by using the foreign connection and not making the queue managers as a member of a bus.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Chuck with PPD. Your line's open.
I have two questions. My company is trying to build up the messaging platform. I think we are considering this WebSphere default messaging provider as our backbone. So my question is more of how do I apply this, or how do I take advantage of it in our environment? So my first question is, if I want to run web service through that platform, through the messaging platform, is there an advantage of running it over this platform? I mean, or let me ask more specifically. If I want to run web service, I can bind it to HTTP or to DNS. Can I bind it directly to the SI bus? How do I get better performance out of that architecture? Could you answer the first question first?
Sure. Yes. Well, basically, one of the main advantages of using service integration bus is the web service integration. You can use web services outside of SIB within WAS, but the main web services integration is one of the main advantages of SIB, and I would recommend to use it. Yes.
What kind of advantage? I think that's my question. You keep saying there's an advantage. What kind of advantage? Is it performance, or is better like building object I can make use of, or is I don't know, better troubleshooting tool? What kind of advantage?
Well, from my own perspective, since I work on the service integration bus, the main advantage is performance.
It's performance.
Yes. And the information center has plenty of information about the web services using the service integration bus. I can send you some links also, if you're interested.
Yeah, that would help. Because also, that leads to the second question. I mean, you want to do mediation.
Yes.
Do I have to purchase WESB or the mediation feature from SI bus would be sufficient? I mean, if I consider
well,
the services in that case.
Okay. The SIB integration bus within WAS, okay, does provide the mediation programming extension, but it's to a certain extent is considered a light version compared to what DSB provides.
Okay.
So you can do more things, in other words, with the ESB mediation extension rather than the default one. But you can also create your own or deploy your own mediation applications.
Oh.
Within the service integration bus in a standalone application server, or without having the ESB.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I still have hard time to picture, you know, the difference. What is lightweighted? What is preferred way of doing it? So, do you plan to have another like webinar to kind of address that integration?
Yes, definitely. This is another opportunity for another presentation.
Okay.
Also, there's so many opportunities in this service integration bus, but we'll plan accordingly for those.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There are no other questions at this time.
Thank you, Jose. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.